Hello and welcome to a mini series of podcasts designed to raise the issues facing all government organisations to tackle legacy IT and move towards digital transformation. I'm Simran Sahota from the Government Digital Service, and across three podcasts, I'll be delving into real-life examples with professionals from across government. You'll hear the good, the bad and the ugly, and get practical advice on best practice. Each podcast is broken into three elements: technology, process, and people implications. This podcast will focus on why end users are key to solving legacy IT and moving to digital transformation. To speak on this today, we have Rohan, Chris, and Roxanne. So, over to our panel. Please can you introduce yourselves and tell us about your role and experience in government?
Good afternoon, my name is Rohan Jai. I work in the DVLA. I've been a service owner for the last 8 years. I've done a variety of different roles, worked on the Digital Exemplar Programme with GDS. I've been the vehicle service owner, looking after services such as buying a person's registration, registering a car and car tax. And I'm currently the driver's service owner, looking after the driver licence services within DVLA.
Hi, I'm Chris Ferguson. I'm a director in GDS. I've been here since GDS was created in 2011, part of the original senior team. During that time, I've been responsible for most of the major products, GovUK, Verify, the Governance of Platform Suite. And now I am the director for the Service Design and Assurance Directorate, which oversees the assurance of £9 billion worth of tech spending and the creation of service standards and the technology code of practice. I'm also currently the director of the National, International and Research Directorate.
Hi, I'm Rox Heaton. I'm one of the directors at GDS, and my role, having had some experience in the Royal Navy and the private sector, is now to lead the cross-functional digital data and technology strategy. But also I am very lucky to also have another role, which is to look after the common components that government uses, which includes a lot of systems and data.
Rohan, given your experience with the DVLA, we've often found that frontline staff are the primary users of legacy technology, which also makes them the experts in risk mitigation of that particular tech. Have you also experienced this?
Yes, they often feel as if they're left behind because obviously they've seen the kind of end users get great digital and online experience, and yet they're still accessing and using legacy technology themselves every single day when they're processing the same applications. So one of the things that we've done in DVLA is try to bring the kind of internal users to the same kind of level as the external. So we've got a model office where we can test out new technology, but also new services. And we can effectively use that as a user insight lab and get kind of real-time feedback from the staff, either kind of working on the development of new services or tools and technology to support them in their day job. But also what we've done as part of one of our most recent changes, which is migrating the tachograph service from the legacy platform to a new open source cloud-based system, is we've actually designed and used the internal staff essentially as users. So they've gone through the same experience an external user would be in terms of research, insight, testing the service at each stage, testing the different design patterns, and actually becoming integral to the development of the new service. And that's really been great to see because they've been involved from kind of day one of that particular project, but they're also now getting access to modern, up-to-date, flexible services just as the end users are. And, you know, hopefully it's the first of many services within DVLA that will give our staff that different experience of interacting with the services that they use.
What you've spoken about there is the introduction of new services, but Chris, there's often a moment between old and new where you might have teams maintaining and running the old system whilst the new system is still being explored or still being built. I wonder, in your experience, if you can advise on how do you bring those two teams together in a positive way?
Yeah, happy to. So the reality of digital transformation in government is that you're often building the new world right next to the old world, sometimes literally, and sometimes it's in a different department from where the new thing is. And that can be quite awkward. And if you think about all the different ways that can manifest, you could have the legacy technology team could be proprietary stuff. It could be a Microsoft piece of technology. It could be IBM, it could be somebody like that, versus an in-house team like a GDS or an in-house digital team in a department. The new thing could be looking at just at front-end changes versus changing the whole stack. You could have departmental teams versus the center in terms of all the things. So there's a lot of different ways that the legacy team and the kind of the new team come into place. And that creates a real culture challenge and leadership challenge. And so some of the ways I've kind of tackled that, because it's definitely happened in areas I've been responsible for, certainly in GovUK, in terms of Verify. First of all, I like to lead with the data because you'll find there's a lot of legacy opinion to go with legacy technology. So data is a good way to cut through opinions and to keep people focused. Second, obviously, a focus on user needs, current user needs. It's quite possible for user needs to date, and that's one of the risks that you can accrue in a legacy service or a legacy system. And the final ingredient I'd put in advice for anybody is to tackle it with a dose of humility, because at some point in the past, the people running the legacy thing were doing the number one thing. They were probably widely celebrated for delivering that. And just because something has dated out of its best utility doesn't mean that it should be viewed contemptuously. And so, you know, learning a lot from those people and bring it forward into, you know, whatever the replacement is going to be is really important.
What are the ways in which leaders can really balance the technology considerations without compromising the end user experience?
Great question. And Chris touched on some really pertinent topics there. So I would just start, for example. That's really important. It's really important to show that you're listening to users' needs and that they are, and recognizing that they are changing and they're getting more complex and more dynamic over time. And what is the user need that's the most important? For example, it's definitely going to be a secure and safe service. They might not want all the personalization up front, but absolutely having their data, as Chris said, being secure is really important. With the Vulnerable People service, which was the back end of the shielding service that was used during COVID, the team got something out to support all those who needed to be shielded within a week. That was fantastic in order to be able to serve the user need. Obviously, it's been built on as the user need has changed, getting different forms of information to the local authorities in different ways to make their experience even better. But that wasn't all available on day one. But the most important thing was getting something, which was the food parcels, out to the users on the front line and in the community.
Something I think will make a big difference is that the move to remote working has compelled a lot of people at the top of the office to work in a way they haven't before, and perhaps expose them to processes and practices that they have literally watched incorporate their needs and change and adapt over. Like if you take the first month of lockdown last year compared to where we were at by May, the use of technology, how we'd adapted it, we made things easier to operate remotely, showed the speed, potential speed of change. And I think it was probably for many people, very senior officials and even ministers, it was the first time they really saw these kinds of systems change before their eyes and realised that actually there's an adaptability here that would not have been possible, say, 10 years ago in government. So I think in terms of giving us more leverage and more agency going forwards, I think that was a useful moment and a useful demonstration.
And then just on the topic then of, you know, COVID-19 and the current state of affairs, there are obviously lots of pressures on budgets and timelines that tempt leaders to deprioritise addressing legacy IT. What would you say is essential for leaders to consider before making a decision on budgets?
I think for me, Simran, one of the kind of challenges that we'll get is actually there may be a reliance on legacy in the short term, because actually to make services work quickly, you have to rely and integrate into legacy technology. So what you might find is that leaders kind of steer away from the long-term strategic decisions, which actually ultimately ends you moving off legacy. And I think we've got to be really careful when we're making those decisions that we don't make short-term ones just to kind of react to the current situation at the expense of the long-term improvement, not just for the citizens and the staff, but also in terms of how we manage and the spend that we have on our technology. So I think we're in a really difficult position where we've got to balance that short-term versus the long-term. For me, though, I think the key thing, you know, as a leader is to always balance off what are the ultimate benefits to the organization, to our users. Those have got to be the key decisions. allied, as I said, to the strategic end goals that we all want to strive to achieve. I think for me, the first question you've got to ask is, could this be done in a different way? Is there actually a route for doing this that doesn't increase your reliance on legacy? So that's the first question. The second one then is, well, if that's not possible, how can I do it in a way that's as light touch as it can be? So I'm not actually creating more legacy debt, for want of a better description. So if I am having to do something in the short term, I'm doing it within an existing framework, within existing kind of components, where I don't need to increase the amount of reliance that I've got on legacy technology over a longer period of time.
A bit of a pitch for this, the role of the centre in all of this. So first of all, there's all the risks that you see locally that are part of tackling your legacy estate. But actually, there's a whole other level of risk when you think about what the concatenated risk is across government of having multiple, legacy IT systems all over the place. And you can chain that risk together of some things being perhaps compromised and what can then be done with that data information, or those vectors to get into other systems and compromise those, and you can kind of work your way up. So there is a role for the center. And so if I was talking to leaders, I'd say, first of all, your expectations of the center should be raised, and you should be demanding like a clear definition of what do we even mean by legacy, which is a good question to ask because it has different meanings. It's very open to interpretation. And what are the priorities from the center that I need to be incorporating into my activity at local level? And just to throw out two words, I don't have a definition off the top of my head, but two words that kind of I think add up to legacy are unsupported and accountable. And they're very different things. Unsupported or unsupportable going forwards is perhaps out of date technology and things like that, but also unaccountable. It's a system that doesn't allow us to see really how it's working. Analytics is difficult. It doesn't allow us to hold the people operating the service to account. Leaders across government need to be very conscious of commercial cycles, because the penalties for exiting things early can be great and can rob you of your ROI. Don't forget to invest in your skills composition. So people in new types of jobs that maybe didn't exist 10 years ago, like service designers, invest in skills, invest in training. So the skills composition, especially if you have a big outsource thing and you're replacing something in-house. And then finally, a classic I see all the time is people request money to invest in the creation of the new thing, but forget about the maintenance and operating costs downstream. GDS is guilty of this just as much as anybody. So focusing on the savings and developing it so it's like, cost neutral to build the new thing, it's not, because you still have to run it. So ongoing costs need to be part of your equation.
Chris makes a great point there. And I was going to touch on something similar, but linked to Rowan's point about focusing on what's most important to the business in terms of the need, and focusing on potentially what systems may be used, for example, every hour of the day, as opposed to, say, once a month, is just one example. Chris's point, though, also, it's a journey. So different businesses and organisations will have different amounts of money in different pots. And it's a risk appetite position for the board and the executive team as to where to invest capital spend versus operating spend. So it's recognizing collectively that perhaps you won't be moving everything to the cloud this year. That's a lot of operating spend, but it's recognizing that absolutely we need to invest in more of that and ask for that potentially next year. So it's looking ahead and understanding that legacy IT versus more digital IT than using the cloud uses different forms of money. And so it's bringing everyone on that journey as well, not only just technical teams, the finance team, and clearly everyone else.
Rohan, I think when we've spoken in the past, you've spoken about leaders knowing whether we should manage and maintain legacy IT or invest in transformation. And there was an example you had about turning a kind of 24-hour service to a 12-hour.
Yeah, and I think that was a really good example, actually, of kind of trying to address a user need versus what the constraints are with legacy technology. And actually, when you look at the profile and the analytics, the majority of the users of that service were from the motoring sector. So they tended to kind of trade between the kind of traditional hours of probably 8 till 6. So actually, you're meeting most of your users' kind of demand from doing that. But also then you're leveraging legacy technology. Now, some of the legacy services obviously switch down overnight because they do things like batch runs and overnight updates and et cetera. So to actually have a digital service only available during kind of office hours, for want of a better description, actually allows you to do a real-time update into the legacy system, doesn't then impact on some of the other kind of key things that the legacy system also performs, but at the same time releases some value to users. Now, obviously from a digital position, you'd want it available 24/7. If that's not possible, what you have done is you have leveraged legacy to provide a better service to users, albeit not perfect. And that's some of the kind of trade-offs you've got to kind of decide on. Do you want to kind of get 70% of your users moving away from sending in paper applications to digital, or do you want the perfection of having something that's a fully transformed off legacy service? And, you know, clearly in the current situation, getting, you know, less postal applications in and getting more people onto digital services is a kind of risk-based choice that you're going to take.
How important are therefore user needs to that, and how are they considered to help kind of overcome some of the questions that Rohan poses there?
I often think about a productivity roadmap and an emotive roadmap as well to bring people on the journey. So I can invest in all the new fancy payment mechanisms that you'd see potentially in the consumer space, but at the same time, I'm investing on the other roadmap, which they might not see, and people in the executive might not see directly, which adds benefit, which is investing in cyber and security. And so I always consider what is going to bring people on the journey, and investing in those things that enable those around the board table to really appreciate where the investment goes, because they can see it, but also those that will address the legacy ITs and technical debt in their background. And user needs come from everywhere. They come from bottom up and top down. So a lot of listening and horizon scanning, because often users don't know what they don't know. So it's understanding not only based on the data that Chris talked about and the evidence as to where there may be a cyber risk or where we should be investing in terms of the latest addressing of vulnerabilities, but also it's how can we delight and surprise users so that they enjoy using government services.
If I could build on that, because I think, Rox, you made some really terrific points. And one of the things we discovered over the course I've been involved in all the digital strategies we've developed as GDS, and, you know, one of the things that became incorporated ahead of 2015 spend review and the new strategy was that civil servants are users too. And our Government as a Platform program was all about creating cross-government services and platforms, as opposed to thinking about everything exclusively in terms of end user needs. And we had to come up with, you know, even though the founding tenets of like user needs first, not government needs, and the strategy's delivery, those are still core things to all strategies. You're not allowed to simply present the same strategy again and say that we're still doing this one. So we explored things like failure demand as a way of articulating, you know, the importance of finding user needs and the importance of departments being able to find failure demand as a way of surfacing needs and addressing things. But my final point is that not all needs are obvious to the end user. There are always examples, things like think about security needs. I think a lot of people are more savvy now today about privacy and their data than they were, say, 8 or 9 years ago. But I'd still be quite surprised if in like testing sessions with users, people are articulating like clear security needs. So there's always a requirement for government and for anyone developing services to interpret, do some interpretation on behalf of the end user.
What measures do you or do your team have in place to ensure that other functions are brought in to support addressing legacy IT?
Yeah, there's a fairly trite phrase that transformation is a team sport. But one of the things that I talk to leaders across government about is that often if you're appointed, say, as a CDIO, you're responsible for quite a narrow slice of the territory you need to be transforming. So often government estates, often government technology belongs to CTO, not Chief Digital Officer. There are commercial implications that we've already mentioned, you know, contracts, there are large programs. So there's lots of things that are not under your direct control, but that are fundamental to being successful in terms of the transformation. And I think that the functional model is a really good way to come at that problem, because what you can do is you can define yourself as digital data and technology as a function clearly, and you can define your goals clearly and like horizontally across the government estate. But you can also do that with a view to explaining you know, here's where the digital data and technology aspect of this ends and where the finance aspect of this begins, or the program project management, or the policy, or the, you know, estates, etc., all the different types of function. And that is really important, because it's very easy otherwise for everyone to just shrug and say, oh, it's a digital thing, is it? Right, so that's, you're doing that then, are you? When in fact you really need to collaborate to deliver profound transformation. You need to collaborate across the functions.
What can leaders do to support frontline staff where job roles are likely to change, where there is digital transformation? And Rohan, I wonder if you could come in here. Is there an example in the DVLA where this has been done?
Yeah, I think it comes back to my earlier point, actually, is about engaging really from the outset of the change to understand what it means for those staff, but also, you know, any changes to their role that might entail as a result. So that's the kind of first thing, certainly if somebody's kind of moving from kind of one service provision to another, taking people through that change. But also probably goes a bit broader than that. I think it's more of as Chris said, it's kind of alluding to all of the professions across an organization and understanding actually what's the end outcome of those changes or that transformation going to mean for the organization in terms of the organization design. And clearly, you know, one of the things that we've done within DVLA is we've tried to develop the capability of our staff in the digital and technology community. So what we've kind of done is we've developed a number of different programs to actually build those skills ourselves. And that's kind of a mixed recruitment. So obviously you'll go out and look at people maybe coming through the graduate market, and we've got tie-ins with the local universities. You'll also look then more broadly in terms of other people who might want to join the organization, but also how do we grow our own within DVLA? So how do we take staff from maybe an operational background? They may be on the phones in the contact center. They may be somebody who's keying transactions in one of our input or casework teams, and actually trying to unlock their potential, because they may have in their, you know, previous career or through their education, design skills. They may be great with customers. They may be natural researchers. They may be people who are have got an aptitude for development. So across the kind of broad range of DDAT professions, we've had a number of schemes where we can essentially grow our own. And that kind of, that's a very broad ranging program. It could be people going through apprenticeships, people going on getting, you know, university qualifications, but all with the end goal of them developing a skill and an aptitude within the kind of digital data and technology community. And that then removes your reliance at the same time then on external contractors to supplement those teams, but also gives a career pathway for people within the organization to think, actually, I don't necessarily need to be in an operational environment forever and a day. There are other opportunities within the organization. So that's just in the DDAT space. But I think if you look at more broadly as well, within any organization, and certainly DVLA is a great example of this, where all the functions are in one place, you can also grow and develop your career in other areas as well. Policy might be one, communications, finance, or HR. You know, so it's not just restricted to, you know, changing people's roles from kind of operational to IT or digital. There's actually other supporting functions that are equally important for organizations now, but also in the long term. Whilst the jobs that you do today will change, there are other jobs that are definitely going to be needed for the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Do you think with the EU transition period and the height of COVID, there was obviously a urgent push to get digital services out the door, if you like, and digital supplier contracts developed within days. Do you think there is now an unrealistic expectations of speed of delivery when it comes to digital deployment? And what can be some of the dangers of prioritising time over process and governance?
Yeah, so I've got experience of that recently, because we delivered a couple of services really quickly in response to the pandemic. But they were built because they were built on existing services. So the infrastructure was there, you know, the kind of the common components that kind of build a great service already in place. And it's essentially just then repointing it to meet that particular user need, because it's maybe something that hadn't been done in the past. If you're then trying to do something brand new or something more transformational, then that's going to be much more difficult. So there's an expectation that if you can deliver one digital service in a matter of days or weeks in our case, you can do that for everything, and that's not the case. And I think one of the kind of key things that we've got to do is really, again, and this comes down to understanding user needs and doing those discoveries properly up front, is really understanding how complex any transformation or any service development would be right at the outset. And again, letting the team set the expectation for when that's going to be delivered, not let the leaders necessarily set the expectation up front, because I think that's the kind of danger that you can go into, is that you've always got that, well, let's deliver it in weeks or months. Actually, sometimes you need to go through that organic process of a discovery, understand the user needs, understand the technology landscape, understand the policy constraints that may surround that service before deciding when you think a realistic timeframe for delivery would be.
And there was a point there you mentioned about bringing in something brand new and something transformational. And I wonder, Rox, if I could bring you in there to give us some insight into how do leaders prevent becoming detached from the end users, whether that's citizens or frontline, when it comes to implementing something new or something transformational or something big?
A lot of listening, be it either digital listening or active listening, face-to-face or virtual. So using data to back up at what is needed. There's a phrase called walking the walk as well, which is a really good thing for leaders to do. It, so often we've got a great team around us who take away a lot of our own admin. And sometimes leaders can become a bit detracted from actually what the community are using our systems are actually doing. So for example, is the digital transformation all the way through end to end, or at some point, for example, the magic of the customer inputting their data actually then at the back end gets printed off and faxed somewhere else, posted, etc. So for a leader to walk the walk through a system, it really helps leaders understand where all the friction points and pain points are, and back to those emotive pieces, the emotive side, the productivity side, where time is wasted, where emotions are frayed, and where paper, for example, was wasted as well, and how to expedite and reduce those friction areas.
Sometimes with legacy IT, users become used to a particular way of working or comfortable with a particular way of working. So how do we curate a culture in the organisation that embraces digital change?
A good question. I think in government, I think there's a strange relationship with change, because anybody who's worked in government for any real length of time knows it never stops changing. Whether it's departments splitting and becoming new things, whether it's the law changing, politicians changing, etc. So that there is a constant form of change. But some people think that nothing changed over the centuries in the British government. I think that COVID, not even Brexit, made every official in Whitehall look at, how the digital world had now entered into their daily life, the way that COVID did, and remote working and having to get things done, from virtual offices and virtual environments.
So one of the things we're kind of looking at is what we call the concept of digital voices. So there's lots of people who are kind of practitioners, they've got experience, but they don't necessarily share that with others. Sometimes what you can find is people who are working in the digital teams, sometimes they just get their head down and get on with it. And certainly when you're working remotely, you don't have that interaction with each other that you would do when you're in the office environment. And that was one of the benefits that we had in Diva Lay, is everybody's kind of co-located on one site. Everybody kind of knows everybody. It's like a little village community. That's not possible, obviously, when you're working remotely. So one of the things that, as I said, we're trying to do is kind of create that community spirit across all of the different digital professions. So service management have their own kind of community, product managers, developers, cloud engineers, etc. But overarching all of that is the concept of the digital voices, and start trying to share that experience with other colleagues within the agency. And one of the things I joined in with yesterday, which I thought was really excellent, was as part of International Women's Day, several digital voices actually reached out and spoke to colleagues across the organization. So they weren't just talking to other people in the DDAP profession, they were talking to people from the contact center, from communications, etc., and just sharing their career journeys, how they kind of got into digital, what they've learned, how they've developed their own career, their own capability, and sharing that with people who don't normally talk to digital professionals.
That's great. And I think a great way to bring this podcast to a close with some positive pointers. So thank you to our panel, Roxanne, Chris and Rohan. You've really helped bring to life the significance of end users at all stages in the digital transformation decision-making process. I think we can all agree that moving from legacy to new isn't straightforward, but embedding the user experience within that process can ensure that we're guided by the right motivations.
Within this series, we also have two other podcasts, with one looking at how to get yourself out of a legacy IT contract and to stop it happening again, and one looking at the support leadership requires to address legacy IT. We encourage you to listen in to get a real feel for ways in which government organisations can make the best of digital transformation. For further information and support on any of the points raised in this podcast, please contact the Central Digital and Data Office.